Green News for you.
Green News for You, your environmental news source, bringing you the latest in environmental news
with the weekly roundup.
A WPS production.
Hello, I'm your host Mel, and I want to welcome you to another edition of Green News for You. In this edition, we will be talking about water treatment. As I've stated in my other podcasts, and you will most likely hear me say this again and again, water is a precious resource that we meaning those of us that are fortunate enough to have running water, take for granted. I'm going to go through some facts here, a list of facts that I've made up. 884 million people lack access to safe water supplies, approximately 1 in 8 people. 3.575 million people die each year from water-related disease. The water and sanitation crisis claims more lives through disease than any war claims through guns. An American taking a 5-minute shower uses more water than a typical person in a developing country slum uses in a whole day. Only 62% of the world's population has access to improved sanitation, defined as a sanitation facility that ensures hygienic separation of human excreta from human contact. Lack of sanitation is the world's biggest cause of infection. 2.5 billion people lack access to improved sanitation, including 1.2 billion people who have no facilities at all. Diarrhea remains in the second leading cause of death among children under 5 globally. Nearly 1 in 5 children deaths, about 1.5 million each year, is due to diarrhea. It kills more young children than AIDS, malaria, and measles all combined. Every 20 seconds, a child dies from a water-related disease. Now, less than 1% of the world's fresh water, or about 0.007% of all water on Earth, is readily accessible for direct human use. No one is immune to these problems, and it cannot be swept under the rug. Now, I can go on and on. It was a large list that I went through of facts, but let's start looking at solutions to address these issues. Let's face it, the old way of water treatment is outdated, and we need to look at new ways to treat water. To talk about this, I have Melissa from Organica. The company is engineering fresh solutions for fresh water. Melissa, welcome to Green News for You.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I think you did an excellent job of addressing the water issues. We, as a society, and when I say society, I mean a global society that we are faced with every day.
The list can go on and on. There's a lot more facts about water.
Oh, there's a ton more. I think you hit on what we like to call the emotional pull of how much this is affecting people, you know, just worldwide. It affects everyone. And we've got people in the United States right now who we don't really have access to all the problems that, let's say, someone in Africa or India is faced with, because we've got such a robust and well put together water infrastructure. But one thing that we are faced with, which is the unseen, which is the water structure, the pipes, the treatment plants, the distribution centers, they're all old and they need to be replaced. And we don't have the money to replace pipes.
Yeah, I understand. That's part of that old system. And that's how come you're starting to get a lot of boil water alerts.
Exactly, especially when it rains.
Yes, definitely. Now, share with me the history of Organica.
Okay, well, Organica started and is based out of Budapest, Hungary. The two founders, Attila and Istvan, have known each other since childhood, and this was right after the fall of communism, and they started looking around and realizing all the damage that had been done to the area because of Russian occupancy. So they got together and started in the business, basically, of municipal wastewater treatments, the typical ones that we see everywhere. Have them in Richmond, have them in England, have them in Hungary. And a few years into that, they were reached out by Michael Shaw, who's part of John Todd's Living Machine. So Michael Shaw and John Todd came to them with this idea. They then took it to what we like to call Organica 1.0 and started what we have as this greenhouse infrastructure to treat water. Now, what we have today is our U.S.-based office, which is Organica Sustainable Water, which came to, we opened in the U.S. about a year ago to bring to the U.S. this new technology. And like I had mentioned in previous talks, this is a decentralized technology where we would be placed near the source of water and treat the water for reuse there. So this is what we call Organica 2.0.
Now, what's the mission behind Organica? Has that changed over the years? I mean, when you're dealing with one country, it's probably different from the way you deal with another country. So
it's funny that you say that, because we have a lot of people, you know, when they come to us and we tell them about our idea and our technology, and we have plants worldwide. We have plants in France, Hungary, Turkey, Poland, and China. And when we talk to people in the U.S., they often say to us, "Oh, well, you can do that in France, but you can't do that here." Which always makes us laugh, because we think, what's the difference in the wastewater in France compared to the U.S.? So really, when it comes to our mission, it hasn't changed. We are engineering fresh solutions for fresh water. We want to, what we like to call, extend the life cycle of water. The U.S. mission is a little bit different from the global mission, which is we specifically work with the reuse and reclamation of water. That's our main driver.
Okay.
It's not just treating water, but as I said, extending the life cycle of water, giving it a second chance, harnessing it as a resource and not a waste.
Okay. Now, why do you think that is, when somebody says, you can do that in France, but you can't do that here? Why do you think that is? Why do you think the people say that?
Well, I think one thing, and I love America, so I will say that, but I think we are a little cautious when it comes to technologies that we haven't done. We're treating water. We're treating water fine. The way we do it works. Why do we need to do something else? I really have no idea why it comes up in conversations, and I think it's just the unknown. We know that what we've got works, so why would we do something completely different?
Okay, so it's almost like a mindset where,
yeah,
we got this going on, why do we need to treat something else?
Yeah, and like, for example, one client that I've worked with has said, this is a great idea, and you know, that's the best thing about Organica Sustainable Water right now, is that we haven't had anyone really say no to this. Everyone thinks it's a good idea, they're excited about it, but it's one of those, it's a great idea, but maybe in the future, because we don't think about it.
But there are a lot of problems that are starting to take place here in the U.S. with the way water is being treated.
Definitely.
And it's starting to show.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And one thing that I saw was that I thought was really big was the smell of the current water treatment facilities. Mm-hmm. I know we have one here that's in D.C. right on the Anacostia River, and you could be a couple of miles away. When that wind's blowing just right, you can smell it for at least 4 or 5 miles away.
So you don't really want to put your house near it, is what you're saying.
Exactly, because I grew up next to it. I grew up right by the Anacostia River and the water treatment plant.
Oh.
And when the wind would blow, it would reek.
And I bet on a hot summer day, that is the worst thing you'd want to smell.
Yeah, yeah. So what makes Organica different in that aspect as far as that smell?
That's a great question. And what I'm actually going to sort of switch topics.
Sure. Still
going to talk about Organica, but I'm going to talk to you about the product, which is what we call the Blue House. And this is what makes us different from your Washington, D.C. municipal wastewater treatment plant. And that is that the Blue House is enclosed in a greenhouse. So it's a completely enclosed building with fed batch reactors, which are essentially different habitats filled with 2,000 to 3,000 different organisms treating the water naturally. So because of this, because we're a greenhouse and we're enclosed, we do what I had mentioned earlier, which is called decentralization, which is we are closer to the source of water and not miles and miles away. Mm-hmm. So because of this, we have a less footprint, and this makes us also more energy efficient. Now, to address your point of smells, because it's in a greenhouse, it actually is filled with tons of flora and fauna, and you can grow just about anything in there, not edible food, because it is wastewater that's
right.
being treated in there. But they're these magnificent greenhouses that really smell like if you ever walked through the woods on a day after it rained, and it just smells like earth, and mm-hmm. it smells good and natural. That's what the blue house smells like.
Do you have to know horticulture or botany or anything like that?
You really don't. One of the benefits of the blue house is that Organica Sustainable Water will actually maintain the blue house once it is implemented. So we'll have someone on our staff that would take care of the plants. And really, the plants take care of themselves, minus a few trimming of dead leaves or, you know, a dead plant or replanting a new plant. That's pretty much it. You could have a black thumb and work here.
Now, do the plants, that smell, is it absorbed through the roots system?
Yes.
So it doesn't go out into the atmosphere.
No. Nope.
Now, when we were talking about the that water treatment plant, we're talking about a really large facility, and you said that your facility is more towards the source of the water.
Yeah.
You're not dealing with a huge amount of smell.
No, we're not dealing with that huge amount of smell. And to your comment about large municipal plants, are very large. They're in the hundreds of thousands of square feet. What we have is a 1,500 square foot blue house, which can treat up to 100,000 gallons per day. And that's our size small. So we have custom designed plants that could fit up to 50 million gallons per day.
Wow. When you say blue house, is that similar to like a greenhouse?
Yeah, that's our trademark name, because it is a greenhouse, but its specialty isn't growing plants. Its specialty is treating the water.
Right. Now, can you take me through the process of when the water would enter your facility?
Sure. So we do what's called sewer mining, which is, let's take just a very generic campus, like a college campus, and there's tons of buildings on all of these campuses that have a water pipe going in and a wastewater pipe going out. They all eventually meet up to one big sewer pipe. So what we would do is we would sewer mine the water at that point of the main pipe where all the extra pipes are going to.
Okay.
We would pull out some of that water, treat that water. It would then go through a series of anaerobic and aerobic reactors, which is, this is what we call a fed batch system, where it's several different reactor bases doing a separate job. So it's got a settling tank, and in each of these reactors, there's different habitats, each doing different function. You've got your really hungry fish at the beginning getting the most, not fish, I should say organisms, because they range from one cell organisms to all the end where we do end up having koi fish.
Oh, okay.
So in the beginning, you've got your really hungry, the ones that are going on a feeding frenzy. And then it starts slowing down, because as you finally get to the last reactor, there's little to no waste there. And then the water is cleaned, and then it goes through the reverse osmosis process, where it can then be sent into the cooling towers or boiler systems or even irrigation for reuse.
Oh, that's good, because I was going to ask, where does it go to? I mean, after you use it, what can the water be used for?
So as it is black water and gray water that we'd be treating. It's used for non-potable sources, which would be your cooling towers, your boilers, irrigation. If you were to build a brand new building, you could put this in as your toilet water. And we really focus on cooling towers and boilers, because those are the largest consumers of potable water in any given industry.
Right.
They use an enormous amount of water. And when you're looking at the problems we face with drought in the summertime, the rising cost of water, we really shouldn't be using water that should be for our drinking supplies.
No, I agree. What type of savings can a university, since we're using a university as an example, what type of savings can a university see?
Well, for one example, and my best example is to use Atlanta, Georgia. They right now are suffering from the highest water rates in the country, which to put that in perspective, they pay $29 per 1,000 gallons. For your perspective, D.C. pays $9.20 per 1,000 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically paying two-thirds more than you
are.
Wow. So for a college campus that we did a study on there with the use of water, the amount of water that they use, they're a very large campus, if they were going to purchase the Blue House straight out, that would be $1.5 million. Their return on investment would be 3.9 years by how much money they would save.
Oh, okay.
Now, one other option we have is not the that you would buy it right out, because we do understand the economic times, and $1.5 million isn't just lying around for everyone. So what we have is what's called a build, own, to operate, which is where we would build it, we would operate it, a campus would lease us some land, and then they would buy the purchased water for us. That same campus would save $250,000 per year under the build, own, operate example. So, and this is, again, this is Atlanta, Georgia. So you're looking at either getting a return on investment, saving $400,000 every year, or saving $250,000 every year. But either way, you're saving a lot of money.
Yes, you are saving a lot of money.
All right, 'cause go ahead.
Well, return on investment, 3.5 years is a very short period of time to see a return on investment at 1.5. If a campus or community were to put up that type of money, that return on investment is amazing.
Yeah, it's very amazing. And what we would like to do if once this gets implemented and facilitated is see that money used for benefits in the community. You know, if you're saving $250,000, average cost to send someone to college these days is, I mean, I know I'm paying at least $60,000 in student loans. I know that's much more than some other people and much less than some other people. But with $250,000, that's a scholarship to someone who wanted to pursue sustainability or make this movement part of their future career.
Right. That would almost cover a four-year state college.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or you can use it, because a lot of things we see with universities that we work with are trying to tackle the low-hanging fruit, you know, switching out light bulbs, going trayless in the cafeteria, or creating a community garden. We really encourage taking the savings that you would receive and putting it back into the green movement.
Which would be the wise thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you feel that the U.S. is addressing the problem with water?
I think the movement is starting. I think that there's been, you know, it always starts out slow. So it's a documentary here, or it's the news article about Texas being in drought and not having enough water to put out wildfires.
Right. Or California, where they're dealing with the water that's being brought in through levees and dams and stuff like that.
I think it's, you know, I don't think we're doing the best job we can, because I have articles sent to me daily on water crisis throughout the U.S., whether that's, as I mentioned earlier, the cost of repiping an entire city, to the cost of not being able to water your lawn because you're on a drought, or the fact that you've got the Rio Grande that hasn't reached the Pacific Bay in 20 years. So the information's out there, but I think what the problem is we're focusing on energy and carbon footprint and turn the lights off and these very simple steps. And what people are forgetting is that water and energy are interrelated. You can't have one without the other. The treatment of water, whether it's pulling it to send it to your house and then sending it from your house to be treated and discharged, that whole process is the largest user of energy in every city.
Mm.
19% energy just to treat and move water.
You're correct on that, with because I've been on discussion boards with where we get into big discussions about how come water is not being talked about. And like you say, everybody's talking about their carbon footprint. Everybody's talking about energy, alternative energy, wind power, wave power, and looking at all of this. But I think it's starting to come to the forefront. And I was going to ask you, do you feel that the U.S. is kind of falling behind or playing catch up in this? But I think the world as a whole is kind of playing catch up with this problem.
I have to agree. I have to agree with you. I'm actually on one message board right now where it talks about that, and we've got people from all over the world. I'm very surprised at how far the internet reaches sometimes.
Yeah.
And you hear, you've got third world countries who are becoming first world countries who have to play serious catch up because of their lack of infrastructure and how damaged their water is.
Right.
So those are at the forefront. You've got, you know, China and India. People know that their water what their water crisis is. But then again, you've got England who is starting to do stuff, and Scotland who's starting to do stuff, but we're still, I think we're all playing catch up. I think you're right, because I think we've underpriced water for so long, and it's a human right to have access to water, but we don't know how much it costs to allow it to be a human right, if that makes sense.
Right. No, I understand. You know, and they're even talking about bottled water. You know, we're paying for bottled water and everything else. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous because of how it's the process that goes into just making that bottle.
You're right.
And how much water it takes to make that bottle.
It takes 5 times the amount of water that's in one bottle of water.
Exactly. And then we're looking at the whole picture when we're dealing with a water crisis because of, like I had said in the beginning, I mean, it's how much water is available to us.
Exactly. And, you know, the bottled water thing really is my, I guess that's my pride of what I'm trying to fight, if you will, my
right.
spare time. I don't focus, you know, we don't focus on drinking water. We focus on non-potable water. But in my researching and you know, discovering more about water as a whole, the bottled water industry really just, it really blew my mind. And it blew my mind how you pay $1.99 for 8 ounces of water at 7-Eleven. You pay 2 cents for 8 ounces of water out of your kitchen sink.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not regulated.
It's the FDA. There's a great movie called Tapped that I highly suggest to you and the listeners really to take a moment and watch, because it really hits home and makes you realize what's going on.
So the name of the movie again is called Tapped?
Tapped, T-A-P-P-E-D.
Very good. Now, I'm going to have to take a look at that because the water crisis affects all of this. It's a larger picture.
It really is.
That we're looking at with water crisis in India, in Africa, in third world countries, and even here in the U.S. It's something that we need to take a look at. Do you feel that this water situation can be turned around?
I think it can. I think we've taken strong steps in conservation, and it's about conservation, and it's about getting the word out there, creating awareness. We used to have a saying, it was the 3 A's, and it was awareness, acceptance, and adoption. And that's really, first, you know, nobody's going to adopt this if it's something they don't know about. So you have to constantly just tell people what's going on. And then once you can start making those easy decisions, like turning the water off when you brush your teeth, then you can start making the bigger decisions.
Right. And I think schools, because of course there's going to be the generation coming up that's going to have to take on the challenges that we have now.
Yes.
I think schools are beginning to teach environmentalism to the children, taking them out and getting them involved in the community and having them look at a watershed or having them look at the environment. They're teaching recycling now. Here in Maryland, they actually passed a law that in order for you to graduate, you have to pass a course in sustainability. I'd like to see other states do that. I mean, because it just opens the door wide up for the next generation to learn. I know because in colleges, it's a pretty new thing here with mm-hmm. sustainability. And a lot of courses that they teach just don't open up all the way to what's being taught, you know. And I think I talked with you earlier about that briefly, where I believe you took a course in sustainability in college, if I'm not mistaken, or
yes.
along those lines.
Yeah, and my master's is in sustainability.
Right, and it's just when you're talking sustainability, it's just so broad, and I just don't think that you can cover that in a 4-year process because it's just so much to cover. And I think it's something that needs to start out now in the younger children and work its way up.
You're right.
As
you're
they
right.
get older.
And that's one of the reasons why we really focus on universities. You know, we've got other clients too, such as industrial or commercial settings. But really, we want to focus on institutions, because where else are you going to get that next generation to really understand why this is such a great concept, this Blue House? You know, because not only is it a facility, but it's also a laboratory. It's what we call a living learning laboratory, because you can have this on site for your environmental engineers, and they can physically get hands-on and learn how the system works, or even you know, do studies, do research, do experiments, and figure out how to make it better.
Right.
Nothing's ever perfect. There's always room for new development. And that's what our hope is that going to colleges will find, and universities will find, that really passionate, zealot person who understands that this is really what it takes to become the next generation, to really help water be sustainable for as long as it can be. Because that's one of the problems too, is that, you know, water is a reoccurring resource. It turns to ice, it turns to evaporates into the clouds, it turns to rain. But what we're facing right now is dry areas are getting drier and wet areas are getting wetter.
Right.
So we need to really work together to help solve these problems.
No, I totally agree. You talked about some other countries that your product is in.
Yeah,
you talked about Hungary,
Hungary,
India,
China, Poland.
How are they accepting what's going on, like India, what they're facing now? And that one pops to my head the most because I just got through watching a documentary called Fecal Attraction.
Well, you know, every country is different, and a lot of places in Europe are a little bit more accepting of new technologies. I can't really speak on how we won bids there to have plants there. Mostly we win bids, we're approved for implementation because we are a lower cost. We've got a smaller footprint, we have a lower cost, and we don't have odors. So, for example, one of the plants that we have in Hungary, in Telki, is right along a neighborhood of homes that are, in U.S. dollars, $1.5 million houses. Now, I know that if I had $1.5 million and I was buying a house, it wouldn't be near a wastewater treatment plant.
Right.
But in Telki, this is the highlight of their neighborhood. Because it is this beautiful greenhouse that doesn't smell, and it allowed them to live in such an affluent society.
Mm-hmm. I find that the U.S., I know with the custodial end of things and cleaning end of things and environmental technologies, a lot of that stuff comes over from Europe.
Yeah.
On the technique side. Even with wind energy, they're ahead of us.
Yeah.
And I find that a lot of the technologies that are going on over there, it's kind of like the U.S. is, oh, okay, it's working. Let's try it. Let's see how it does here.
If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, but I do believe that we realize that these issues need to be addressed.
I agree. I think, and you said it earlier, it's really a generational thing. And I think we're all starting to realize what needs to be done and how we can do it. And whether that's through wind energy or water conservation, I think more people than not are cognizant of this and are wanting to make a difference.
I agree. Now, before we go, is there anything else you feel we should touch on?
No, you know, I think we really covered everything from how our technology works to what we offer people in the U.S. I think that we're very excited about this, and we just want to make a difference, and we're passionate about what we do, and hope that others see our passion and want to be a part of that.
It's a great technology. It's something new. It's innovative.
Yes.
It can help communities. It can help universities, large campuses. It is beneficial for this type of system to be put in place, especially with renewables and the savings that come along with it. It's not a greenwashing. It's fact.
Exactly.
It can save you money. It's renewable, and it helps the environment. And that's what we need.
Yeah. I think that sums it up really well. That's a really good summation. And we are an environmental company, but we're also here for what we call the triple bottom line, which is touching the environment, the economics, and the people.
That's excellent. If somebody wants to get in contact with you, how would they go about finding your company?
I can give you our website now.
Sure.
Which is www.o-sw, BlueHouseH2O.
And that's how they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah.
Melissa, I thank you for coming on Green News for You and talking to us about Organica.
Great. Thank you so much.
And I look forward to hearing updates on this. And I'd like to have you back on the show sometime in the near future so we can talk more about this. And I'd like to hear about some of the companies that are using this technology or some of the locations here in the U.S. that are starting to pick up on this type of water treatment.
That would be great. I would love to.
Thank you again.
You're welcome.
I want to thank Melissa with Organica Sustainable Water here in the U.S. for coming on Green News for You. If you found this podcast informative, please consider making a small donation or becoming a sponsor of Green News for You. Thank you and have a great Eco Week.